Okay, so you know how, like, in those closely held corporations, like family businesses, there's this kind of constant need to control who actually gets to be an owner.
Right. Yeah.
And what happens when that bumps up against somebody who's like, hey, I'm owed money and I'm coming for my collateral? Those shares are mine. So that's kind of what we're going to dive into today.
That's a great way to put it.
It's this really interesting case, an Indiana Supreme Court case from 2003, FBI Farms, Incorporated versus Moore. And it really highlights the clash between kind of wanting to keep ownership tight and those creditor rights.
Right. Exactly. And this case is essential if you want to understand how share transfer restrictions actually work, especially when you get these involuntary transfers a sheriff's sale.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to break down kind of the main rules that came out of this case, like when can you enforce these restrictions and how do courts try to keep things fair between a company controlling its own ownership and making sure creditors aren't getting screwed over.
Yeah. And this is, full disclosure, anyone going into corporate law, this is like bread and butter stuff,
Well,
right?
absolutely.
I don't know this stuff.
So we've got, as always, we've got our trusty materials to guide us. We've got some podcasts, well, some deep dive guidance, the case summary, a good old-fashioned case brief laying out the legal nitty-gritty, and even a perplexity analysis just to, kind of give us that big picture view.
Love it when we get those. Makes it so much clearer.
So let's set the stage. Talk about this birder family and this farm at the center of it all.
All right, so picture this. 1976, Indiana. We've got Ivan and Thelma Berger. They decide to, like, formally incorporate their family farm, make it official, right? Call it, FBI Farms, Inc.
Catchy name.
Yeah, right? And they bring in their kids and their spouses, the whole family affair, including Linda Berger and her, at the time, husband, Burchell Moore.
Classic family business setup.
Right, yeah.
Right. And here's where the initial contributions start to matter big time. Moore and Linda, they both put in a 180-acre farm. They put this farm into the new corporation, and they get shares in return.
Yeah.
Moore ends up with a big chunk, like 2,507 shares, and Linda, she starts with one, but then her dad gives her some more later.
So this is interesting, right? Because this is going to come back later.
Yeah.
Like, did Moore actually pay for his share of the company, or was it just gifted to him?
That's exactly what they're going to argue about later.
Right, because this wasn't, he didn't just show up. He put skin in the game.
Exactly. And that kind of establishes his, initial interest in the company. Now, fast forward a year, 1977. The board of directors, and this is key, Burchell Moore is sitting on this board.
Right.
They decide to put in place some share transfer restrictions.
Okay.
Now, this is pretty common, in these closely held companies, especially family ones, because they want to keep control over who owns the company.
Yeah,
Okay.
makes sense.
So these restrictions have a few key parts. First off, if you want to sell your shares, you need the board to approve it. Second, the company itself gets first dibs. They have the right of first refusal to buy back those shares, usually at book value.
Right.
And then the third part, and this is the one that really matters in this case, transfers are pretty much limited to, get this, blood members of the Berger family.
Blood members.
Yeah, so think about it. Moore's on the board. He agrees to all this. So what do you think? What does that tell us about how this whole thing might play out?
Well, I mean, it seems pretty clear, right? He was there, he agreed to it, he knew what the rules were.
Yeah.
How's he gonna argue later on that these rules shouldn't apply to him?
Yeah, you can't really claim you were blindsided when you helped make the rules. And this really highlights the point that as insiders, they understood that this was a closely held entity and what that entailed.
Exactly. All right, so let's move the timeline along a bit. So the farm's running, everything's going, as family businesses do. Then, in 1982, Linda and Burchell Moore decide to call it quits. They get divorced. And this is kind of the first domino to fall, setting up this whole legal showdown.
Right. And in the divorce settlement, Linda, she ends up with all of the FBI farm shares, but Moore, he doesn't walk away empty-handed. He gets a $290,000 judgment against Linda.
That's a decent chunk of change.
Yeah. And here's the kicker. This debt, it's secured by a lien on those FBI farm shares that Linda now owns. So even though he doesn't have the shares anymore, he's got a big legal claim on them.
Okay, so just for everyone listening who might not be super familiar with legal jargon, can you break down what a lien is?
Sure, a lien is basically a legal right or claim against an asset, in this case the shares, that's used to secure a debt. So it's like saying, hey, if you don't pay up, I've got a right to take this asset to cover what you owe me.
Got it. So Moore is not a shareholder anymore, but he's a creditor with a secured interest in Linda shares.
Exactly. And that sets us up for the big conflict. So we jump ahead again, this time to the year 2000. Linda, she defaults on her debt to Moore, and Moore, being the savvy creditor he is, well, he takes steps to get what he's owed.
Right.
Enter the sheriff's sale.
The infamous sheriff's sale.
So a sheriff's sale, for those who haven't taken civil procedure yet, it's essentially a public auction. You know, they sell off assets to settle a debt. So in this case, Moore exercises his rights as the lien holder. And at this auction, he ends up buying Linda's FBI farm shares. It costs him a little over $290,000. So he's back in the game, back in possession of those shares. But this time, it's not a friendly handoff. It's a forced sale thanks to Linda's unpaid debt.
Right. So you'd think case closed, right? Debt's paid, shares have changed hands.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
But FBI Farms doesn't take this lying down. They pull a pretty bold move. They try to cancel more shares, the ones Hugh just bought. Like, what was their legal justification for even trying to do that? Seems pretty aggressive.
Yeah, it was a big swing. Their argument was that, get this, Moore never actually paid enough for his original shares back in 76 when they started the company. They were trying to say his initial ownership was invalid, so anything stemming from it, even the sheriff's sale, is null and void.
So this is where that initial contribution to the farm comes back into play.
Exactly. It becomes the centerpiece of this whole legal battle.
So just to recap, we've got this family corporation. They've got these rules about who can own shares. And they're trying to block a former insider, who's now a creditor, from getting back in through a forced sale.
And not only that, they're trying to erase his original investment.
Right. Yeah, like it never happened.
It's messy. So naturally, it ends up in court.
So let's talk about the legal fight. Like, what are the big questions the Indiana Supreme Court had to sort out to untangle this mess?
So Moore, he sues FBI Farms, right? He wants his ownership rights recognized. And as this case goes up the legal ladder, the Indiana Supreme Court, they're faced with these fundamental questions about how corporate governance and creditor rights work together.
It's like this collision of two different areas of law.
Exactly. It boils down to three main issues.
Okay, lay them on me.
First one, are those share transfer restrictions, you know, needing board approval, first right of refusal for the company and the whole blood members thing, are those even enforceable against Moore? Mm-hmm. He got the shares through this involuntary sheriff sale. But remember, he was there when they made those rules.
Right. He was an insider. So that's issue number one. What about the second big question?
The second one goes even deeper. Can these restrictions actually stop an involuntary transfer? Like, can a companies say, no, we don't care if it's a foreclosure or a sheriff sale, you can't transfer these shares. Does a company's desire to control who owns it trump a creditor's right to collect on a debt that's secured by those very shares? That's the real balancing act here.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And the third issue.
Well, the third one focuses on FBI Farms' Hail Mary, trying to cancel Moore's shares by saying he didn't really pay for them way back when. Was that even legal? Can you go back years later and try to undo someone's ownership like that?
So essentially, three big questions. Do the restrictions apply to Moore? Can restrictions stop an involuntary transfer? And was canceling Moore's shares even a legal move?
You got it. It's all about this tension between a company's internal rules and the external legal world of debts and creditor rights.
Right. So what did the Indiana Supreme Court ultimately decide? Did they pick a side?
Well, they tried to find a balance.
Okay.
Their main ruling was this. Those share transfer restrictions, they were enforceable against Moore, no question. He knew about them, can't get around that. But, and this is a big but, they couldn't be used to block the transfer that happened through the sheriff's sale. And to top it off, they said FBI Farms trying to cancel Moore's shares after all this time? Nope, not valid.
Not a total victory for either side, then.
Exactly. It's nuanced.
So let's break down their reasoning. First, why were those restrictions generally considered okay?
So the court, they get why these restrictions are common in closely held companies. They serve a purpose. They let owners choose who they're in business with. The court even had this great line, they said, and this is a quote, "Stock in a corporation is not merely property. There's no greater objection to choosing associates in a corporation than in a firm."
I like that. It's not just about the money. It's about who you're in the trenches with.
Exactly. But then the court makes this crucial point. Yes, those restrictions were generally valid. Yes, Moore knew about them. But they didn't specifically say anything about involuntary transfers like a sheriff's sale. So they couldn't be used to block this particular transfer.
So even though he was an insider, the rules weren't specific enough.
Precisely. It's not just about knowing there are rules. It's about knowing what those rules actually cover. And this is a big takeaway for anyone drafting these agreements.
Yeah, be specific, people.
Now, the court also had this reasonableness test.
Okay, what's that all about?
They didn't just automatically approve every restriction under the sun. They look at a few things to decide if the restrictions were actually reasonable. Like, how big is the corporation? How much do the restrictions limit the ability to sell shares? How long do they last? And do they actually serve a legitimate purpose for the company? Like, in this case, the blood members rule was meant to keep the company in the family.
Makes sense. You can't have restrictions that are just outrageous or go on forever.
Right.
So what about the attempt to cancel more shares based on the argument that he never really paid for them? Why didn't that fly with the court?
So the court said, hold on. Moore put in that 180-acre farm back in 76. That counts as consideration for his shares. You can't come back now, years later, and say it wasn't enough. Basically, that initial transfer was a big deal, and it cemented his ownership.
Right. So the court's essentially saying, you can have your restrictions, but you got to be crystal clear about what they cover. And you can't just rewrite history to get rid of someone's ownership.
Exactly. It's all about finding a middle ground, respecting both the company's right to manage its ownership and the creditor's right to get what they're owed.
Makes sense. Now, one of the justices, Justice Rucker, he agreed with the outcome, but he had a slightly different take, right?
Right. He wrote a concurring opinion.
Can you explain what that means?
Sure. A concurring opinion is when a judge agrees with the final decision of the court, but they get there through a different line of reasoning.
Okay. So what was Justice Rucker's perspective?
Justice Rucker was more focused on the agreements themselves, the shareholder agreement, and the articles of incorporation. He emphasized that Moore was fully aware of these from the get-go. He basically said, the rules were clear, Moore knew them, end of story. He didn't really get into the whole policy debate about balancing corporate control and creditor rights that the majority opinion focused on.
So for him, it was more about sticking to the contracts that everyone had already agreed to.
Exactly. And this highlights how important it is to have well-defined, unambiguous agreements in corporate law. They really carry weight in disputes like this.
All right. We've covered a lot of ground here for our listeners out there, all you future lawyers. What are the big takeaways from this case? What should you be keeping in mind as you go out into the legal world?
So lesson number one, and write this down. You got to be super clear when you're writing corporate governance documents, especially those share transfer restrictions. If you want to block involuntary transfers like foreclosures or sheriff's sales, say it explicitly. Don't leave any room for interpretation.
Right, because any ambiguity is probably going to be interpreted in favor of the creditor, not the company.
Exactly. And that can lead to some major headaches down the line. Another key point is that this case shows us how courts try to balance the need for companies to control their ownership with the rights of creditors to recover what they're owed.
It's a delicate balance.
It is. And the court's going to look closely at whether those restrictions are reasonable, whether they have a good reason for existing, and whether they unfairly limit a creditor's rights. We saw that in how they looked at the blood members rule.
Makes sense. So what else should our listeners keep in mind?
Well, this case also underlines the importance of properly documenting everything, especially when it comes to shares being issued and what was given in exchange for those shares, that consideration we talked about. You want to avoid situations where someone can come back later and challenge the initial issuance of shares like FBI Farms tried to do. Meticulous records can prevent those kinds of disputes.
Solid documentation is a lawyer's best friend.
Always.
Okay, last question. What's the main takeaway for lawyers who might be advising family-owned businesses?
This case has a lot of implications for those situations. So for those working with family businesses, FBI Farms versus Moore is a must-read. Share transfer restrictions can be really useful to keep ownership within the family, but this case shows their limits, especially when you have creditors involved. You need to plan ahead, think of all the possible scenarios, and make sure your shareholder agreements and other governing documents cover everything, including those involuntary transfers.
And don't be afraid to have a lawyer look over those documents regularly to make sure they're still doing what you want them to do and that they're up to date with the law.
Couldn't agree more.
So, at its heart, what does FBL Farms v. Moore tell us?
It's all about finding that balance between corporate control and creditor rights.
And that clear, precise drafting is essential.
Absolutely. It shows how even internal company matters can have huge legal consequences out in the real world.
This has been a fascinating deep dive.
I agree. It was a good one.
But it leaves me wondering, you know, with all the fancy financial stuff going on these days and how corporate ownership is getting more and more complex, how would the principles from this case, you know, from 2003, how would they apply to new situations, new kinds of involuntary transfers, or these crazy ownership structures we're seeing pop up? This tension between corporate control and creditor rights doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this area of law develops.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, we encourage you to think about that too. That's something to ponder as you continue your legal studies.
Lots to think about.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.
See you then.